Good morning. May it please the court, I'm James Bowles on behalf of Petitioner Garner Morrison. We're asking the court to review and vacate the order of the National Labor Relations Board that found unlawful surveillance and unlawful assistance with regard to this meeting on April 2, 2007. As the court is aware, the administrative law judge who heard the case and saw the witnesses found there was no unlawful surveillance, no violation of the act, and that
we don't review the ALJ.
That is correct, but it's part of the record as a whole.
But it doesn't change our standard of review at all. It just changes what we're looking at, right?
You're saying
the record as a whole.
You are correct.
It's still
the standard of
substantial
evidence on the record as a whole, and right. We contend that the board did not have substantial evidence on the record as a whole.
Right.
In particular, with regard to the surveillance, which was the linchpin for its entire decision.
And what do you understand that standard to mean, substantial deference? What are we looking
substantial
at?
Evidence
substantial
on the record
evidence,
as a whole.
Yeah.
That you have to look at the evidence and see whether all the evidence supports the board's finding.
No, not whether all the evidence does. Whether some substantial evidence does.
Not some substantial, but substantial.
Substantial evidence.
Yes.
Okay. I put the sum in because you said all. It isn't all, it's some. The word some is not in there, but the word all definitely is not in there.
All right.
Proceed, please, counsel.
Thank you. But what the board did in this case is it ignored the entire context of this meeting.
I don't think it ignored anything.
Well,
is that fair?
Yes, in the sense...
They reviewed the context of the meeting.
Well, in the sense that, as the ALJ noted, there was already an 8F agreement in place. A Section 8F agreement between the carpenters and Garner Morrison. And the purpose of the meeting, and all witnesses testified to this, that the purpose of the meeting was to explain the benefits under the new contract. So there's a legitimate purpose for the meeting. There's a legitimate reason for Garner Morrison being there. Carpenters is not a stranger union. They invited Garner Morrison to attend the meeting. So this isn't a situation where Garner Morrison's doing something nefarious to be present at the meeting. Garner Morrison did not even know, and the ALJ found, and the board did not reverse this finding, Garner Morrison did not even know that authorization cards would be signed at the meeting. Didn't know that they'd be presented. No witness testified that Garner Morrison knew that those authorization cards were being signed.
There wasn't a finding by the ALJ that they didn't become aware of that during the meeting.
Yes, Garner Morrison found out only after the cards had been signed that they were being signed, and the
After the first cards or after the last
cards? No, after the last cards, after all the cards were signed and then they were presented. The ALJ found, and it's in his decision, he specifically said that Garner Morrison was 65 feet away and was in no position to see the card signing.
Certainly and you say the board never explicitly rejected that?
The board specifically said it did not need to reach that issue, that it did not reach that issue and did not need to reach that issue. So it did not consider that because it found that the mere presence of Garner Morrison at the meeting constituted unlawful surveillance, and that's where it deviated from its past decisions without a rational basis. And what it did there is it said mere presence is enough, but in all the other cases that the board has found surveillance, there's been some element of, number one, employer knowledge of protected activity. You can't surveil or spy on somebody if you don't know that the protected activity is occurring. And the board had so found in a case called Cuomo Mills that we cited to them. And the board there said that the mere presence of a supervisor during a meeting where authorization cards were signed is not coercive, as long as the supervisor was not in a position to see the actual cards being signed. And the board relies on another case called Venatron, which is very different. In that case, the supervisors were in a position to see who was signing the cards. The employees were paid for their time during that meeting, and they were directed to attend that meeting, and it was required. It was at the plant. This meeting was very different. The meeting was voluntary. It wasn't held on company time. The employees were not paid for the meeting. Employees were asked to attend the meeting. The employer stood at the front. The employer representative stood at the front of the meeting 65 feet away and were not in a position to observe. All of the decisions that the board has found surveillance, the employer has been engaging in some activity that was out of the ordinary, that was nefarious, that was...
So you rely on Como, or is that, am I pronouncing it right?
Como Mills, yes.
Como Mills. So, but as I recall, there was only one management representative present there. Here we have the whole management team. Isn't that a rather significant difference?
I don't see the difference in that there was a legitimate reason for the management people to be there.
Isn't the touchstone of the inquiry whether it is likely or reasonable to conclude that it has a coercive effect?
If you have
one person there, can't you have one person there, it doesn't quite have the same impact as having the management team there, even though the management team may be there for perfectly legitimate reasons.
No, because I don't think the board has ever held in any case that if there's legitimate purpose for the management presence, that it's coercive.
Has it ever held that the legitimate purpose for presence is sufficient to defeat coerciveness? You may be very carefully stating accurately,
well,
but carefully stating.
Yes. Well, let me say.
Is this really contrary to any direct precedent?
Let me say that in a number of cases that we cited, Aladdin Gaming, Honda of Mineola, Sunshine Piping, where there was observation of card signing and other protected activity, the employer had a legitimate purpose for being present. See, either its guards were on a normal patrol or it was walking by, or the mere presence is not sufficient. It has to be for a purpose. And even the board says, it said, without evidence, that the purpose of the management was for the purpose of influencing employees to switch their allegiance. But that's not what the purpose of the meeting was for, or the management presence. All of the witnesses, and here it is all of the witnesses, said that the purpose of the meeting and the purpose of management being present was to explain the benefits to the employees under their new collective bargaining agreement. And that's Gary Service said, the meeting was for the presentation of plan and benefits at Joint Appendix 19394. Travis Garner said the meeting was to have the guys look over the benefit packages and learn the different benefits of 1506 agreement. The administrative law judge said all employees should attend the meeting since it affected their health coverage. Chris Morrison said, I asked Mike McCarron, the head of the Carpenters, if they would explain the benefit package to my men and go through all their choices at the time. James Boyle said that he was told by Travis Garner.
You don't need to recite all of that because all of it seems to be saying there was a legitimate purpose for the meeting.
Right.
That board never said there was no legitimate purpose for the meeting.
No, but the
you
board...
You can win that point not win your case.
The board said that the purpose for the management being there was to influence the employees.
Right, that's
and I'm saying
question.
The substantial evidence is not support that. There's no evidence because Garner Morrison didn't know the cards were going to be signed. You have to have some element of motive, improper motive.
When people start going to the back of the room to sign cards, was the explanation, was there any response to questions about benefits going on?
The explanation of benefits had concluded.
Right. So why was Garner Morrison still there?
Pardon me? Why was Garner Morrison still there? Oh, I'm sorry. There were tools laid out. There was going to be some sort of a raffle at the end of the meeting for the tools. The employees were going to go back, sign up for their health benefits, and then they had a raffle, and they gave away tools. So that was the reason that the meeting had not yet concluded. And the testimony was that Garner Morrison's representatives stood up at the front 65 feet away and were not in a position to see anything as to what was signed. And what the employees signed at the back of the room primarily was insurance and benefits information. And then the carpenters asked them also to sign the authorization cards. But that was unknown to Garner Morrison, and there's no evidence in the record that Garner Morrison knew that. And the administrative law judge's finding was not overturned on that. The board did not overturn that finding. I'd like to move on to one other issue, and that has to do with the remedy. And I know that the board has great discretion in fashioning remedies, but it cannot deviate from its prior precedent without an explanation. In this case, there, as we've explained and as the board found and the ALJ found, there was a pre-existing collective bargaining agreement. The ALJ thought it was arguably or colorably already a 9A agreement, a full-fledged collective bargaining agreement. Remember, this is in the construction industry. You can sign an agreement without any employees. You can sign an agreement with a minority union as long as it's on an 8F basis. And the employer already had in place a collective bargaining agreement with the carpenters that said, if you don't have an agreement with the painters, our agreement covers you.
Putting aside the interpretation of that clause, can I just ask you as a practical matter, what is the difference between what you want and the board's footnote 2 in the
yes, as I understand the board's
footnote on it, but the, I think it's their last utterance in this
yes.
case.
As I understand,
that clearly gives, at least I think it's clear that there's no problem about your recognizing the carpenters under 8F with respect to these people.
Yes, the reason
forward.
Here's the reason. Yeah. Here's the difference. Number one is what the board's order says is that we cannot. That we can in the future sign an 8F agreement. It doesn't say that we already had an 8F agreement. Second of all, right?
I understand that linguistic difference.
Right, and then the board's order is asking for the carpenters to return all the dues and initiation fees that were collected under this 8F agreement, which lawfully allowed for the collection of dues under an 8F agreement. That's perfectly proper. So it's that, and also the employees would lose the benefits under the 8F agreement in that there wouldn't be an 8F agreement in place.
Lose the benefits. So, mm-hmm. So that goes to a question that wasn't entirely clear to me. Being a member of the union was essential to getting the benefits?
No, you don't have to be a member of the union to obtain the benefits. However, under an 8F agreement, after 7 days, after the eighth day of employment, you have to become a member in order to work, and that's a union security clause, which is lawful and proper in the construction industry under 8F. So the point is here is what the board is saying is you have to rescind that existing collective bargaining agreement, pay back all the dues, and wait for a period of time until there's a notice posting and all of that before you enter into another 8F agreement. And there's another complication, which is the Bruckner case says that because a petition was filed by the painters, you can't enter into an 8F agreement while a petition is pending. So we could not enter into a new agreement. So there is a difference between the board's order and what we're asking. And what we're saying is that under Zidell, which we cited, The NLRB has specifically said, we do not read Section 8F as permitting, much less requiring, invalidation of a pre-hire agreement allowable under that section and valid when entered into because of subsequent unlawful activities. So
what would be an appropriate remedy? If we wrote against you, I understand you don't like the if part, But if we rule against you on the merits of the allegation,
right. you would,
what would be an appropriate remedy?
You would say that we would rescind the 9A agreement that was entered into.
And drop back to the 8F.
And drop back to the 8F, which is what occurred in Zidell. That's what we're saying.
That's not consistent with what the board ordered. You can't
correct.
Do that under the order.
Correct. And so we're asking you to vacate the board order. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Nina Shakur for the National Labor Relations Board. As your honors pointed out, the touchstone of the inquiry for unlawful surveillance is looking at the issue from the employee's perspective. But it seems like the court is the most interested.
The touchstone that you better rely on is the standard of review.
Your honor.
You don't have to convince us that the employees would see it the way the board saw it. You just have to convince us the board had substantial evidence from which it could conclude that.
Yes, Your Honor. And under this particular constellation of facts, the board certainly did have substantial evidence for their conclusion. This is a case in which the employees had a multi-year relationship with a rival union, the Painters Union. Many of them had recently signed authorization cards saying they wanted the Painters as their collective bargaining representative.
So what's your best authority for the proposition that the mere presence of the management in this meeting without any evidence that they knew that there was organizing activity going on is nevertheless coercive? Your best authority.
Your Honor, the board has to look at the totality of the circumstances.
I answer so that question, and then we'll look at the totality.
What's your best authority?
Well, Your Honor,
you don't have some evidence, the totality isn't going to be there, so you better answer that question. Don't have some case, excuse me.
Well, Your Honor, the board in its brief relies on Moorhead.
And Moorhead is nothing to do with this case, right?
Well, but Moorhead.
That's what I was getting at. That's your best authority is Moorhead.
Well, Moorhead is what the board.
Moorhead, they're staking out a union activity on the street. They're being furtive. It's under cover of darkness. I mean, Moorhead, in what way is Moorhead like this case?
In both
except in the conclusion the board wants to draw from it.
Well, in both cases, Your Honor, the employer went to an off-site location.
So here's what I think you're telling me. If I'm wrong, please correct me. You're saying you really don't have any authority that's directly on point, and there's no authority that says the mere presence of the management is sufficient. So we have to look at something larger. So there's nothing about the management being there that day that tips the balance in scale of the board. We have to look at something larger. And there may be, in the larger context, there may be things, but there's nothing about the management being in that meeting that tips the scale towards the board. Is that right?
I mean, the management being in the room is one of the factors
in what way? How is that a factor in this case? Because of Moorhead?
Well, because the inquiry is from the employee's perspective, and the fact that the management was in the room.
And so you have authority for that, that if the management's in the room, there are inferences that are logically drawn from that.
Well, it depends on the particular constellation of facts. It depends on the particular context in any given case.
So you're saying in this context, this management on this occasion, that
this
sent
time,
a coercive message?
Yes, Your Honor. In this particular time frame, in a time frame where employees had recently signed authorization cards for another union, in a context
many
where
employees had signed those authorizations?
For the Painters, yeah.
19.
How many employees signed on this occasion here?
How many signed for the Carpenters? 17. So in this particular context, the company urged the employees to attend this meeting. And the board found, and substantial evidence shows, that they did not tell the employees the purpose of this meeting. They just urged them to attend. When the employees arrived at this meeting, they weren't just confronted by one management official. As Your Honor pointed out, there were multiple management officials, all three owners of the company, plus the field superintendent, and 18 or 19 representatives from the Carpenters
Union.
There's
nothing inherently constituting a ULP in having members of management meet with employees, right?
in having members of management meet with employees?
Present at a meeting with employees.
Without unions being in the room, Your Honor? Without a union being in the room, you're saying?
Was there a union represented in the room here?
Yes, there are 18
carpenters. All right, so that's irrelevant,
carpenters
then, the without part. Is there anything inherently wrong with management being there? Is that inherently a ULP? Just at the meeting, there's a meeting.
Okay.
There are management representatives, there are union representatives there, there are employees there. Is there something wrong with that?
Your Honor, it would completely depend on the factual context.
I think I'll take that to mean no, there isn't anything inherently wrong with that. If it depends on the context, then
it
no,
does depend on the context.
Is the board's basic reasoning this? The employees are there. They get the pitch on benefits. They're asked to go to the back of the room to sign cards, presumably having to do with the benefits. They find out that, in fact, the cards there are cards indicating their interest in the carpenters.
Yeah, union right? authorization cards.
And the idea is that regardless of what the management people in the room knew or thought or had reason to anticipate, the presence of the managers there would make the workers anxious about failing to sign the cards. Is that it?
That's certainly part of it, Your Honor. And
well, what's another part? Because I guess the problem I have with that is that even assuming that that is a reasonable inference on the part of the employees, it seems to be a sort of liability without fault for the management.
I'm not sure what you mean, Your Honor. For the unlawful...
If they don't know that there's going to be an invitation to sign these cards, and the board is not relying on any claim of such knowledge, even if the presence of management there does have some sort of effect on the employee's state of mind, why is the management official's presence there intentional? It has to be intentional surveillance, right? How does it intentional surveillance?
Well, Your Honor, the management team was not just in the room. I mean, they also said things like, this is the way we want
That's
to go.
That's not answering the question.
This is the way. Okay. So the way described had been what at that point?
I'm sorry. Can you...
You say that management people said, this is the way we want to go.
Right.
But what precedes that? Is the way getting your benefits... by signing forms that will give you benefits?
Your Honor, the board found that those statements and management's presence was an invitation. Well, the board found that when the carpenters asked the employees to move to the back of the room, it was an invitation for the employees to switch their allegiance from the painters to the carpenters' representative.
I'm trying to figure out what the basis of that is. This is not a question that can be solved by saying the board found. The question is whether the board had substantial evidence for its finding.
Yes,
and what is the basis for inferring that management presence in the room represented some endorsement of signing cards for the union?
I'm not sure that
As you're describing it, we have a conversation about benefits, and the management says these benefits look good to us. And then the employees go to the back of the room and they start doing something else, something that is beyond benefits. But at least nothing you've said tells me what put management on notice that their language, we think this is a good deal, would be seen as an endorsement of the carpenters as a union.
Your Honor, in the board's opinion...
Go ahead, answer me.
Sure. In the board's decision and order, it found it made an inferential, an implicit inference that Garner Morrison set up the meeting with so that the carpenters could recruit the painters and the tapers. and that's at DNO 41.
We're trying to find out what's the basis of that, Counsel. We know they put that in the order. On what did they base that?
Well, Your Honor, they based that on all of the circumstances. Perhaps one that we haven't discussed yet, which is worth mentioning, is the timing. Immediately after the carpenters gathered these cards from the employees, they presented them, they flashed them to the company. And the company immediately signed a Section 9A agreement. Now this Section 9A, and they were ready to sign it immediately, and the union had it right there. And so one of the things the board included in its decision was this immediate action. The court has no further questions?
Court has further questions.
The court does have.
On the remedy, why isn't counsel absolutely correct that the proper remedy is a drop back rather than a cease and desist on the question of agreement?
Your Honor, this is a very narrow remedy.
This is a very broad remedy, the one you entered.
Well,
counsel is asking for is a narrower remedy.
That's not the position of the board, Your Honor.
I know that.
We guessed as much.
But
if it were the position of the board, we wouldn't have that issue. We would just have the first issue. If the board had said, yeah, you're right, we can't do it that way. So we now know what your position is. Now, why isn't he correct, rather than just saying, I don't like the fact that he is correct? Why isn't he correct?
Your Honor, the order needs to be read with the gloss of the denial for the motion for reconsideration, which clarifies that the order only applies to the extent that Garner Morrison and the owners were in a 9A relationship.
Is he correct, then, that it should drop back to an 8F?
Well, Your Honor, the board did not rule on whether there was a pre-existing 8F, and the board does not know.
When you come in here for an enforcement, if you win this case, will you be asking us to say they can't drop back to an 8F? Or will you be agreeable to an order that says they can drop back to an 8F?
Well, Your Honor, the board didn't rule at this time on whether there was an 8F, and in terms of the dues and fees, you know, the proper forum to determine that the scope of any dues or fees would be in compliance.
So in such a proceeding, you're saying firmly that the board will not argue that this matter has been lost by Garner Morrison.
Your Honor,
by failure to get us to reverse this particular provision.
Your Honor, this was a narrow case with a narrow ruling. It addresses the 9A.
That doesn't help me at all. I mean, answer the question that I asked you.
I'm sorry. I must have not understood it. Can you repeat it?
In this enforcement proceeding of which you speak, mm-hmm. are you representing on behalf of the board that the board will not claim that Garner Morrison's argument, essentially, that the pre-existing 9F, 8F agreement can apply to these workers despite this order. The board has not ruled on that one way or the other.
Your Honor, nothing in denial of the motion for reconsideration makes an 8F unlawful.
That's really an evasive answer. I'm asking if the board is representing that nothing that's happened, not talking about the denial of the reconsideration order, the whole thing, there is nothing that precludes Garner Morrison's current contention as to the effect of the relevant section of the agreement with the carpenters.
I'm not sure what I can say, Your Honor, except that the board did not consider the 8F agreement in this case. Whether there even was an 8F agreement.
Make him sound righter and righter every time you evade one of our questions.
I'm sorry, what?
You make him sound more and more correct each time you evade one of our questions.
I take you to be saying that no, you are emphatically not representing that the board will argue that Garner Morrison is precluded on that issue. That's the only thing I can take from your evasiveness.
Your Honor, I apologize if I'm being evasive. My role here is just to try and, you know, represent what the board has said. And
you're
in this case,
with the board, we understand that part, but we'd like to know exactly where the board stuck on this one.
And in this case, the board simply did not rule on the 8F. The board did not say the board did not say if there was an 8F, and did not say whether or not that 8F agreement might have been impacted by this. This was a narrow ruling which was clarified in the motion for reconsideration. Well,
so you would not object to an opinion in which we said they could drop back to the 8A? You will promise that if we run in your favor on the merits, you will not come in here and ask us to enter an order that makes them post as to an 8A?
Well, Your Honor, we ask, of course, that the court enforce the board and that enforce the board order and enforce the remedy.
We're trying real hard to find out what it is.
And we would ask that the court permit this, the court to permit the compliance proceedings to determine what the proper dues and fees that are owed in this case.
So you are saying there are some owed?
If there are.
Yeah.
But the question is the starting point from which that enforcement proceeding will start, right? And you're not giving us an inch on that.
I hope that my answers can satisfy the court, and if they can't, then of course the board would always prefer a remand so that the board can address this in the first instance.
If there's no further questions, then we will let you sit down at this point. Do you wish rebuttal, counsel?
Yes, thank
you. Give back 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Just two quick points. Board counsel said that the board drew an inference that the purpose of the meeting was for
I think it was an implied inference.
Implied inference, yes, right.
You really put two
right.
weasels
I'm in not there, sure the board actually made such an inference, and I think that's sort of a post hoc rationalization of appellate counsel, which this court could not rely on, but. In any event, there's no evidence to support that, let alone substantial evidence, and the administrative law judge found to the contrary. And again, all the evidence was that there was a legitimate reason for Garner Morrison to be there. The fact that after the fact, when Garner Morrison is presented with cards from a majority of its employees, it then signs the agreement, it cannot give rise to any kind of an inference other than that they were presented with cards of a majority of their employees and they signed it. So that's it. And as far as the remedy is concerned is, again, as we think if the board's order isn't clear and it in some way could be read to rescind the pre-existing 8F collective bargaining agreement, then under Zeidel it's wrong and needs to be reversed. They've not followed their own precedent without articulating why, and so that needs to be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Call the next case.